You're listening to the Business Artist Podcast. My name is Jan Melhos, and today my guest is Natalia Geiger. Natalia is a transpersonal coach for life and leadership who works with international clients and her base is in Marbella. She's half American, half Spanish, but until 3 years ago, she worked in New York, and that's when she moved to Marbella, Spain, and is now working from here and helping people to transform, to find their purpose, to make changes, and to feel well-being in their life. Hello, Natalia. How are you?
Hi, Jan. Excited and grateful to be able to spend this time with you and with whoever's listening.
Brilliant. And I'm really excited too, because you have such a inspiring and also I think unique story to tell, and I would like to talk to you about your story today, and to tell us where you come from, what you have experienced, and which transpersonal changes you did yourself. So would it be okay for you to just start very early and tell us, you know, how you were growing up, where did you grow up, and how was your life?
Yes. Well, that's a long time ago. I grew up in most of my life between Spain and the US. Mm-hmm. I was born in Madrid. However, my parents, when I was around 8 years old, moved to Marbella. So I was lucky that I grew up, you know, by the sea in that sense. Mm-hmm. And very exposed because of my father's work and then the different schools that I've gone to a lot of different cultures, mm-hmm. Which is something that now when I reflect back, I also feel a lot of gratitude for, because it really enriched me in lots of different ways. That's the very, very back in the days background.
Yes.
And well, my father passed away. He was diagnosed with cancer when I was around 13, 14 years old. Mm. And before then, I guess we could say that if you looked at it from the outside, I had a very picture-perfect childhood, mm-hmm. a very loving home, financially very well off, traveling a lot since I was very young, what were considered good schools, friends, etc. And then when my father passed away, it really threw my life upside down and the life of all the people around me that were my support system. Mm-hmm. This is summarizing it, right? But I wasn't able for many, many years to have contact with my family in the US, mm-hmm. Because of how complicated things got. Family-wise, due to my father's passing, and the way I describe it when I connect back to the feeling, it was sort of like someone had put all of the people that really cared for me and that I really cared for in a bus, hmm. and knocked it off a cliff. Because with my father dying, my mother fell into a really deep depression, so she was physically available, but she wasn't emotionally available. And then my stepbrothers and sisters, which was the rest of my family, I had grown up with them as if they were full brothers and sisters.
And in the same house?
Not in the same house. They were older than me because my father was married before he met my mom. His wife passed of cancer as well. And so it just felt like the big chunk of the family that was my loving support system, it was all from one day to the next gone. Mm-hmm. And what that well, the impact that that had on me was I was also diagnosed with depression. And a year after that, I started waking up in the middle of the night with what I found out later were panic attacks. And so I was diagnosed with chronic anxiety. Mm-hmm. And my mother, her, you know, really, really kind heart, wanted the best for me. Yet from her best knowledge, and from the place where she was in internally, the only thing that she felt that would help me was to see a psychiatrist, get medicated. And so that was the path I went on for several years, from 14 years old to my early 20s. A lot of medication, a lot of different types of therapy, and it all felt like bandages, like just things that were helping me to cope with what felt a very hostile, unfriendly, and cruel reality. And before that, for some reason, I feel this might be interesting mentioning, as a child, I was very, very spiritual. Mm-hmm. I remember so many times, and it happened a lot in nature and also in my room, but I have these memories of being in nature, and I just felt very interconnected with everything and very at peace. And I remember I would speak to like my higher self or God, the universe, like whatever you want to call it, right? Like I just felt very connected to it. And I've heard of a lot of other adults, and then conversations I've had with younger children, that it seems to be something that happens to more than just me. And then as we grow older and our egoic mind develops, that identification, right? We just become more and more disconnected from that, our true essence. And so I felt that that was really my case, because I went from that deep connection, spiritual connection to myself, to life, to every other being, to feeling that I just lived in a very cruel world, mm-hmm. and that I was a victim of it all. Yes. And I also ended up being diagnosed with a food eating disorder. And when that happened, I really started getting scared, because the coping and what I described earlier, what felt like bandages to me in the things that I was finding or trying out to overcome the suffering, it was proof that none of it was really working, because I was still, in a way, getting worse, right? Mm-hmm. Or apparently, or that's how it felt then, right? And so now looking back, I understand that it was all an experience that I needed to go through for my own growth, my own evolution, my own healing. And so I met this woman through my mother, my mother had reached out to because she was very concerned about me. Mm-hmm. And this woman told my mother something that I will forever carry with me. And it was to forget about me. So she said, forget about your daughter and focus on you. Focus on your own healing, on your own transformation. And just you wait and see the ripple effect that that will have on your daughter. And I get teary just thinking back on it, because the moment my mother made that personal commitment to herself, to mm-hmm. fully take care of herself and begin that path of that deep transformation, she really, really helped me, because through her example, I saw that it was just a month that went by and my mother stopped taking antidepressants. And they had told her that she would probably take it for the rest of her life. And I felt a lot of resistance, Jen, because it's like this strange thing that happens. at a deep twisted level, I had really enjoyed being in that victimhood role.
You didn't want to get out.
I didn't want to get out because it served me. It served me as in it made me feel as a center of attention. Mm-hmm. And I was craving that attention because I had felt unloved, not enough. And so it gave me an identity mm-hmm. that was serving me in a very twisted and suffering creating way, but I didn't know another way. So it served its purpose. And so when I finally end up meeting this woman, and she told me that whenever I was ready to take full responsibility, mm-hmm. That's when my real healing would happen and transformation and change, long-lasting, sustainable change could happen. And I didn't want to hear that. So I left that day and I told my mother, don't you ever speak to me about this woman again. You're both crazy. Like that's, don't you see, like I have an illness and don't you see that I'm defected and don't you see? And I was just so deeply terrified. And I learned right there that what can seem as the worst thing that can ever happen to us, mm-hmm. no matter how intense, how unfair, how whatever it is that the situation might seem, at a deep, deep level, it is always the experience that we need to make that jump, that shift in consciousness, that leap of growth, of evolving, of transformation, of healing. And for me, it was I after that meeting, I got worse and I ended up in an anorexic and bulimic center in Madrid. And it was just what I needed because I really saw the path that I was choosing.
With the other patients? Or...
With the other patients, right. Mm-hmm. And because I had that moment with that woman that now looking back, what I saw that she did was she shined a light, right? This was a person that just had done so much deep inner work and had reached such a peak place of inner peace and fulfillment and unconditional love that's what she radiated. And that it's like, I couldn't digest that. But I had come in contact with it. So a part of me deep down knew that that was possible. So when I then was there with those other patients, the contrast was so huge that I had this moment sitting in the waiting room and I was going to see another one of the doctors there. And I suddenly saw in front of me such very clear two paths. And I understood right there what she meant, that whenever you're ready to take full responsibility, I could choose right there. Mm-hmm. And so, again, very grateful that I had that moment. I don't know, can't fully explain what triggered it or why it was then, but everything that I had been experiencing that led me there caused it to happen, right? And
did you take any decision after that, or did you change anything after you?
I did. I got up, I went to the reception area, and I told them, I don't want to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. And I left. And they were, you know, did not agree. They were like, well, you know, this is the typical reaction, but this is the treatment that you need, et cetera. And I knew that that's not what it was. I knew that I did want healing, but I knew that that wasn't the sustainable path. It was a path of healing with the belief that there is something wrong with me. And I had experienced that there wasn't at some place deep down. So I started meeting with this woman, having conversations, and she became, I guess I could call her my spiritual guide. Mm-hmm. And for many years, she supported me through what I've come to call the inner work with consciousness, which is the work of becoming aware of the areas of ourselves that are the shadow areas, the darkness, right? Not as something to be scared of to be repulsed by, but understanding that they're just areas and part of ourselves that are lacking light. And the light is the unconditional love that's at the source of every living being and of life itself. And I am so grateful that I sort of chose, even it was partly unconscious, but that I chose to fall at that level of suffering because it allowed me to become aware of what I'm telling you, right? And it enabled me to step into a path where I have learned so much about the difference between the suffering that's the natural pain that we experience because we're in a physical body, right? And you know, you touch the fireplace, you're gonna burn, your finger's gonna hurt. Someone you care about dies, you are gonna experience a first burst of sadness, right? The emotion bubbles up. But beyond that, so much of our suffering is self-inflicted and self-created. Mm-hmm. And we can free ourselves from that. We all can. And come back in contact with that true essence, right? Which is that unconditional love that creates states of inner peace and well-being and fulfillment. And in a lot of cases, healing at all levels. And I know that, you know, part of what brought you and I together is the path of healing in this inside out way of the body, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah.
And can you maybe tell a little bit about the advices or the work this woman did with you? How did you do this inner work? How did you find out about this unconditional love?
Yes. Well, it's the becoming aware, waking up to the realization that we are not our thoughts, that we are not the body, that what we are in the broader, deeper, vaster sense is that pure consciousness, that unconditional love, that source energy that you can experience just by walking in nature, right? That's what we are. And we have been blessed in a way as a species because we've developed this incredible, powerful mind, right? Mm-hmm. But there's a big but, and it's what tends to happen when we are unconscious. We forget what we really are, is that we grow up and become more and more self-identified with the thoughts. And that's what I know, you know, many other spiritual teachers and people that have come to the same realization in different ways describe as the ego or the egoic mind. That deep inner work with consciousness that you asked me about is identifying, becoming awakened to when you are acting from that place of self-identification with the egoic mind, with the mind, right? And that's the first step is consciousness, is that awareness. That it's like it suddenly, that's when the awakening happens. You realize it's me and the thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so then there's two here, right? And it's not that there's two, it's just that it's being able to take that step back. That's how it felt like for me, and realize, okay, so that's not me. I can actually observe that. And the more I practice being present and observing it, the less it has like its grip on me. right? And so that's the first part. And then the other part is, how do you transcend it? How do you work on it? I found that it's so simple that so many professionals would find it like, well, it can't be that simple, right? When people have gone to university and studied about psychiatry and psychology and all these fascinating things that are just, they're also very, very valuable. But at the core, I discovered it's so simple, as in, we don't need to go diving and digging for things to solve or to work on. You are living your life, and the different circumstances and people, they trigger the ego. It triggers the conditioning. So when it is triggered, let's say we meet for a coffee and you start telling me about the fantastic house that you just bought and these changes you're doing in your life, and I'm sitting there listening to you, and I'm starting to feel this heat starting in my stomach area. And I'm like, oh gosh, like, damn, I'm so envious. Like, why can't I have all of that, right? That situation is, if, and this is an important if I can notice, become aware that that's what's happening within me, then instead of now projecting that that unpleasant emotion, that negativity onto you, and sometimes falling into then the blaming that it's because it's something you're doing, I'm able to recognize, this is my darkness, right? This is something that I'm being offered through the interaction with you, the circumstances, the opportunity to know, to recognize it, and therefore now to be able to do the work on it. So that there will be less of that within me. And therefore I'll be able to see, okay, so he has that, but I have these other things. And that's not the experience I'm supposed to be living. I'm supposed to be living another experience. You work on the envy, and it's like you release it. And you release it at all levels. It's mentally, it's emotionally, it's energetically. And it has a ripple effect, because every time that you're doing that work, it's adding up. Because what you're really doing is you're creating more, you're cultivating more compassion, more kindness, more of that unconditional love. You're really connecting to it and embodying it towards yourself, and therefore it then radiates outwards to others.
So what is your idea, or your maybe vision? What is this? What is this consciousness? Where is it coming from? And what is the reason? Why do we have to, getting these challenges to heal ourselves and to go this path and to become more aware of the consciousness of the unconditional love? What is it, like Elon Musk says, is it the game which others let us play, where we're playing in? Or is it God? Or what is it? What is our mission?
This is my personal view on it.
I think nobody knows it, right?
Right. So my personal view on it is, if it's life source, right? It's energy. And it's the highest vibrational energy, which is the one that gives birth to life, right? And it's, how can I explain it? It's like through the physical realm, right? Mm-hmm. It's able to experience itself. So it's like, I mean, I'm not the first person to mention this for sure. It's like, you have an ocean, right? Mm-hmm. And that's consciousness. And then you, within you, there's a drop. Within me, there's a drop, right? It's all the same energy. But it manifests in the physical form in different ways. And it's through the experiences, right? What I was referring to, the different circumstances, that it evolves. Because life isn't life if it's not evolving. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's something that we can, if you practice, which I know you do, right? Being present, being still, and simply noticing. You just step out into nature and you see that that's the case. that's the nature of life, right? Always changing, always evolving. So I don't know if that answers the question.
Again, like you said before, it is very simple, but I think the big truths are simple. And
yeah, that's my experience too. Yeah. And there's something I wanted to add to what we were talking about before about the healing, mm-hmm. Which is after that experience that I spoke about with the mm-hmm. depression and the anxiety and all of that, that was my, what led to my first awakening, right? Many years later, I got injured and I wasn't able to walk for 5 years. Mm-hmm. And I learned something that, again, so simple, yet I dare to say the most powerful thing I've ever experienced and that I use in my work with people and even with organizations, right, to navigate uncertainty and challenges and all of that. And it's, I wouldn't heal and time would go by and I had surgeries and I had treatments and it looked like I wouldn't walk again. And that was the diagnosis summarized. And what I realized was the turning point was when at a very, very, very deep, and I mean deep in that it wasn't intellectually, but that it was present in like my whole being, I reached a point where I was so tired of fighting with what is, mm-hmm. of not accepting the reality, not being in sync, therefore, with life in the present moment, right? With that energy of source. That I couldn't sustain it anymore. It was so exhausting. It felt so unnatural that I started surrendering. And it's when I hit that place of acceptance and I knew I was there because although the circumstances were the same, I still couldn't walk. The suffering dissolved. And when the suffering was dissolved, because I was now in love with reality, like I was okay with not walking, I was at peace with it. I was aligned with that energy of source and what it was in that moment, right? I started walking.
Unbelievable.
So that there's something there that we try so hard to understand and ask these, you know, find answers to these universal truths, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm starting more and more to come to the conclusion that what if it's not about finding the answers, because that's at from the mind, right? It's about the felt experience. It's mm-hmm. like you experience truth.
It's a different.
It's embodied. Yeah. It's such a different. It's very different. And when I think back on all the things that have supported me in my process of becoming more conscious and awakening more, it's never been through intellectually understanding consciousness or acceptance or healing, but through the living of it, through the experiencing it in my body. Mm-hmm. So that it's actually the practicality of it.
So then, how can you, so I still, I mean, I hear you, but I still can't 100% follow what you did to heal yourself. You just accepted that you are injured and that you can't change it. And then you healed. Is that correct? Or?
Yes. But basically, yes. What I then learned through a lot of, you know, research and conversation with experts and et cetera, is that, and other people that have also healed from health issues or situations that that can't be explained at a medical level, is that when you are at war with reality, right, which happens so often when something feels unpleasant, right? What is happening chemically and physically in the body is tension, right? Is there's resistance and there's stress in the body, right? And science, neuroscience has confirmed over and over again, and will continue to confirm in the pace that it's going, that when the body is in stress and everything that that implies, right, with the cortisol and et cetera, right, to not get into the neuroscience part of it, the body does in fact function as it's supposed to function, right? The mind gets scattered. We can't focus. We emotionally get hijacked, and like there's just, and so how can in a space of tension, stress, and constant war, and everything that chemically happens in the body when we're in those states, be the space that can lead to healing? What happens when you surrender and accept, and that's what I experienced, is you're embracing the whole experience. And what's behind acceptance really is the unconditional love. Because unconditional love is, I find the term interesting, because if it's love by its nature, it is unconditional, right? If not, it was something else, but it wasn't love. What happens is that's that highest vibrational energy. And I discovered it's the same energy that gives birth to life. So if it can give birth to life, it doesn't surprise me that it heals, right?
No, me neither.
So and that to summarize it, right? Like what that confirmed for me is that real healing and transformation, the one that's long lasting and sustainable, it can only come from within and towards yourself.
And in your normal life, when you have, I can come in quite a tensed state, for example, without anything really happening. I don't, even if I have no problems, no health issues, I can still, come through my thoughts in a way, or some small things or potential risks, I can come in like a state of tension. Do you manage always to be zen, or how do you, or always in the state of love, or how do you?
It depends. It depends what one interprets by a state of zen. I experience, like, for example, right before our talk, right? Yes. I had a situation with my car and I thought I was going to be late to our meeting. So I noticed my heart beating. And I noticed the thoughts of, oh, I don't want to let Jan down and I want to make it on time. The difference with before is that I would believe the thoughts. Like Jan is going to think badly of me, for example, right? And all the other thoughts that like are born from just that thought, right? Because you've got a mind, so you know how it works. And I would not want to experience the heartbeat and like all the symptoms of stress, which would cause more stress, because that's what resistance does. It causes more tension. So now it's like when you watch the clouds go by, I notice the emotion, I notice the physical reactions of like the heartbeat, the sweaty palms, etc. I can see the thoughts, but it passes through so much faster and with way less intensity than when I would get hooked in it, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So as long as we're, in my experience, right, and that's all I can really talk about, as long as we're in a physical body and we have a mind and we experience emotions, we're going to experience unpleasantness. That's why the acceptance is key. Because the moment that it's accepted as part of the human experience, you're already embodying that unconditional love. And then the benefits are that felt experience of the peace, the love, the fulfillment, the calmness, the easiness, the blissfulness even at some times, right?
Absolutely. That's beautiful. And I experienced this myself. I just wished I could have it more constant in my life, but I'm working on this too. But when I'm in a very aware state, I absolutely can feel what you're talking about, totally.
Yeah, what I find that really supports all of us, right, that are on the path of transcending more of that conditioning and reconnecting more to that true essence, is when the unpleasant arises, right, in whatever form it might, to be grateful that it does, because it's the opportunity to free yourself a little more. Mm-hmm. And as you free yourself a little more, you're freeing all of us, because we're all connected. It's that shift of consciousness, that next evolving state that we're doing, of course, individually, but that is also happening collectively.
Yes. So, these are beautiful thoughts and I think very wise and very true, but still in our society, in particular in organizations, corporations, although I see a little bit also this awareness coming up now, but most of the time it's really driven by reaching the bottom line with whatever means necessary, and pressure and aggressiveness and mind-based, logic-based. So how do you bring this kind of awareness into organizations and leadership? How do you do that? And what kind of barriers do you have to overcome?
Yeah, well, you in my experience, we have to start meeting people where they are at. Because one can't force awakening or a shift in consciousness, right? Mm-hmm. It happens when it's time for that person. And that's when it happens. However, we are, as a species, in a very critical moment in our evolution, being really pushed at all levels to make a new leap in consciousness and to evolve. We see it the way, at so many levels, that politics just is not, it's not working, right? Things with the things that have happened, with the planet, right? At just so many levels, it's like, it's the same as happens individually. We pick up a pattern or a behavior, right? Because in that moment, it served us. Like the victimhood served me, right? And then we reach a point where, because we're now in automatic with that, because that's how we're wired, right? That we create the habits and we continue to function in that way. But it starts to become so uncomfortable and not give us the results anymore, because it's no longer serving. Mm-hmm. It's like outdated. And so many of the ways we've up until now done business, and the way we've perceived each other and organized our society, it's clearly so outdated. Now, what happens, as I always see with clients at an individual level, before the new can happen, right? there's going to be turbulence. It's like all the things that no longer serve need to come to the surface because they need to be recognized, they need to be lived, they need to be experienced, so that it creates that uncomfortableness that makes us make that leap and do the work. And I think that although I could understand that a lot of people look at the world right now and think like, well, it feels more like we're devolving, I can assure you that we are not. We're just in a moment of extreme turbulence, which only means that we're stepping into a more, a shift in consciousness and a step upwards in our evolution. It's going to require work. And in organizations, it's really interesting because organizations have such a powerful role in all of this. And what I see more and more is that a lot of people feel suffocated in organizations. There's this like contradiction to being and have a sense of meaning and purpose. Yes, the structures that are in place don't allow for it.
Natalia,
so
have a little bit of bad connection. Can you say the last sentence again, please? With suffocating, then it was a little bit.
Yes, that what I see in organizations is that a lot of people feel very suffocated. They don't feel heard. They don't feel understood. Yes. They feel that in order to be productive, they need to betray themselves. They need to betray their health. That's not going to be sustainable. It's like that what I spoke to you a minute ago about how it needs to collapse for the new to happen. We're already in the process of it collapsing. So we just need to, again, accept the process, embrace the whole experience of it, and as much as we each can, really listen to our hearts, listen to our bodies, and listen to what is it that we really want to create for ourselves and for the world and for each other. And I love when I meet someone in an organization that they themselves, right, are experiencing that suffering of not feeling heard, of not feeling that their life has meaning and purpose, of not feeling they can be authentic. And it suddenly we have a conversation and I can see like this big load weight is being taken off of like, oh wow, there's another way of doing things. And could I contribute to it? And we all can.
And your way to contribute to it is help people on their journey and to transform. And
yes, I love working and supporting whoever comes my way, be it an individual, be it an executive, someone in leadership, some sort of leadership role in an organization. I also have done work with some teams. Mm-hmm. Whoever is beginning at least to have either already more of an open mind and open heart, or doesn't yet, but the thought of it spark something within them, mm-hmm. I'm here to support them on that journey for the good of them and for the good of us all.
And where do you get your, I mean, of course, you made an incredible journey yourself, and that's where you can take a lot of knowledge and wisdom from. But are you getting coached as well, or where are you taking this? Because I mean, for example, my way is always, I discovered my purpose is that I want to grow and learn constantly. And then immediately what I learn, teach to others. That really makes me happy. So when you teaching people and developing people, where do you take it from? What's the energy which you get? How do you?
Yeah. So in my case, so much of it is from my own inner work, right? Mm-hmm. It's really interesting, and I can't tell you how that happens, but very often I conquer something or I feel that I've transcended something. Mm-hmm. And that's when I get the call of the person that needs just that. Mm-hmm. And where I get my energy and inspiration and support from as well when needed is I have different sources. One is I continue to have a relationship with the person I refer to as my spiritual guide.
Yes.
Say her name or?
Yes, Alicia Moreno Escobar.
Okay.
And she only works in Spanish. Mm-hmm. She only speaks Spanish and over the phone, and is someone that doesn't want a lot of people to know that she doesn't want a lot of people to know her, but she wants to live a very peaceful life. So that's why she's not out there. So it's like the light workers that work in the shadows, right? That they do their work, but silently. So she's one of those. And then also, I collaborate and I'm a part of a coaching organization that's called Invite Change. Mm-hmm. I trained with them. So my professional coaching training was with them. And they, I guess we, because I'm a part of their team, we do really sustainable, long-lasting cultural change in organizations on the lines that we've been talking about. You know, they're a group of incredible coaches, as in their training and experience in coaching, but also that also have had their own personal journey of reconnecting to that place of source of their spirituality. And so we support each other when needed as well.
Perfect. So what kind of people are reaching out to you? Is there like a common denominator or something? Or is people from the young to very old, men, women, or do you have like a typical client?
Well, men and women. Mm-hmm. And usually from later 20s all the way to 65. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so.
And how do they find you?
Well, they can find me on my website, mm-hmm. which is www.nataliageiger.com. Mm-hmm. Also on Facebook. Mm-hmm. Coach Natalia Geiger, and on Instagram, Natalia Geiger Coach. And more often than through either social media or the website, it's through the word of mouth.
Yes.
In my case. So if whoever, now that I've shared my places that people can look me up and contact me, you'll see that I do not invest time and energy in marketing of any sort. I believe, or my marketing strategy is simply to continue to have my own inner work be my top priority, because I know that it's through that example that I most contribute to the world. And that just attracts whoever I'm meant to meet and whoever I'm meant to work with.
Yes. I mean, I have to say, I totally believe that word of mouth will be very powerful for you, because although I'm in this topic also for quite some time and very interested in it, and I listen to lots of different people, I think you have a very unique way to communicate it. And it's very powerful, very strong. And the way you see the process of the world we are in right now, I think that's really beautiful. And I haven't heard it in such a way. And it's very, very, very important that many people hear you, I think, because many people are scared or confused or angry.
Yeah.
And if they were
so, there's yeah. so much confusion, Jan. It's one of the things I see the most. Mm-hmm. We're all yearning for connection, for belonging, for experiencing that unconditional love. And it's just, for so long we've lived so disconnected that of course we feel lost and confused and scared, right? So it's a journey of coming back home, really.
We'll see how long it's going to take.
Well, it will take as long as it needs to take. Thank God, that's not our business. What a release, right?
Yes.
Our business is just to focus on our own awakening and transformation. And then the rest just happens.
So I have to say, these are very good words to end. And although you don't do marketing, I will do heavy marketing for this episode, because I think it's important that as many people as possible will listen to it.
Thank you. And it's been such a joy to spend time with you. And I'm very grateful for the way in which you, in your own unique way, are also contributing to the shift and the change and the evolution of us all.
Thanks a lot, Natalia. I enjoyed it very much to talk to you and to connect with you. And I'm grateful that I've met you.
Me too. And I hope we'll be talking more in the future.
Thank you.
See you soon.
Thank you. And for everybody who enjoyed this talk with us, you can go on my website and book a 15-minute call with me, janmelhos.com. I can teach you more about business, not that much about transpersonal coaching and about awareness, but I'm a student of this. But if you want your business advice, just book your call and I will listen to your case and give you my advice. Thanks for listening. Thank you, Natalia. Bye-bye.